Today is Wednesday, July 22nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Australia mandates face coverings as authorities try to curb the spread of the coronavirus.
The face covering order is the first of its kind in Australia. Bandanas, scarves and handkerchiefs are all acceptable, as the people of Melbourne are ordered to cover their faces outdoors.
Plus, the Trump administration stands by its actions in Portland.
We will continue to take the appropriate action to protect our facilities and our law enforcement officers.
And China says it's been ordered to shut its consulate in a southern U.S. city. We'll have those stories and more next. As the number of coronavirus cases continues to rise, and as national polls show Americans overwhelmingly disapprove of his handling of the pandemic, U.S. President Donald Trump on Tuesday resumed his appearances at coronavirus press briefings. He delivered his strongest endorsement yet on wearing facial coverings. White House correspondent Patsy Wiedekuswara takes things from here.
Only 65% of American adults, according to the latest Pew Research, say they wear a mask in stores or other public businesses. After months of downplaying the importance of face coverings, earlier this week, President Donald Trump tweeted a photo of himself wearing a mask, calling it patriotic. On Tuesday, Trump resumed the White House coronavirus press briefings and signaled his strongest support for masks so far.
I have the mask right here, and I carry it, and I will use it gladly. No problem with it. And I've said that, and I say, if you can, use the mask. When you can, use the mask. If you're close to each other, if you're in a group, I would put it on when I'm in a group.
In April, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reversed their guidance on face masks and said all Americans, not just medical workers, should wear face coverings. But the president has resisted wearing one in public until earlier this month. He has also avoided a national mask mandate, saying that he wants people to have freedom. A recent ABC News Washington Post poll shows that 64% of Americans disapprove of Trump's handling of the pandemic. Norman Ornstein is a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute.
It's creating even more problems for him as the pandemic flares, including now in areas where Republican governors have taken his cues, opened things up, and now they're starting to see terrible problems with the pandemic, and that makes his job much harder.
The U.S. has more than 140,000 COVID-19-related deaths and more than 3.8 million coronavirus cases, with new data from the CDC suggesting the actual number may be 10 times higher. While the administration insists the number of cases has risen due to an increase in testing, experts say the lack of a national policy on the coronavirus is the reason the country is doing so poorly. William Schaffner is an epidemiologist at the Vanderbilt University Medical Center.
The countries that have done well have had a clear national policy. They put the public health people out front. The political leadership has assisted the public health people, and they have had consistent, clear messages to the population. The population understands what the program is, and they're enlisted to cooperate. That's a formula for success. By leaving it to the governors, that's a formula for chaos.
Despite the rise in cases, Americans continue to flock to summer vacation spots like beaches. Different states have different rules, and the federal government's recommendations on masks, testing, and reopening the economy have all been voluntary. Patsy Wiedekuswara, VOA News.
Data released Tuesday by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says the actual number of coronavirus infections in some parts of the United States is anywhere between 2 to 13 times higher than what has been officially reported. The CDC based its conclusions on blood samples collected from people who were given routine clinical tests across 10 regions. The authors of the study, which was also published on the website of JAMA Internal Medicine, said many infected people did not seek medical care or get tested because they likely had mild symptoms or none at all, and likely spread the virus among the population. At least 40% of people who are infected do not develop symptoms. The International Organization for Migration says more than 10,000 people in conflict-ridden Yemen have fled their homes since April in fear of contracting COVID-19. Lisa Schlein has that story.
Nearly 6 years of conflict has displaced more than 3 million Yemenis within their country. Recently, COVID-19 has emerged as the new cause of internal displacement. The UN Migration Agency reports the newly displaced cite fear of contracting the deadly disease, the pandemic's impact on the economy, and interruptions of basic services as their reasons for leaving. IOM spokesman Paul Dillon says their flight has only added to their misery. He says the impact on the most vulnerable displaced is particularly acute.
A woman named Salam in Aden told our staff about people selling their mattresses and blankets and children's clothing in order to meet their basic needs. Displaced women who used to work as maids are forced to beg in the streets because potential employers are afraid they're carrying the virus.
Official World Health Organization figures put the number of infections in Yemen at 1,610, including 445 deaths. However, aid agencies believe the actual numbers are much higher. An examination of some of the country's virus hotspots bear this out. For example, IOM reports a particularly dire situation in Aden, where hospitals are turning away suspected cases because of overcrowding and lack of equipment. It says news outlets are reporting large numbers of graves are being dug. Spokesman Dillon tells VOA that misinformation about COVID-19 is a key driver of the new cause of displacement in Yemen.
False information that's being circulated in different areas about the virus and the emerging and very clear examples of xenophobia and xenophobic attacks being directed at displaced people, migrants and otherwise in Yemen and other contexts as a result of these false narratives.
The charity Doctors Without Borders reports people are fearful of being stigmatized by their communities if they test positive for the coronavirus. The agency expresses concern that many Yemenis are not seeking medical care until their condition is too serious to treat because they believe hospitals are the source of infections. The United Nations says COVID-19 humanitarian operations in Yemen are in deep trouble because of a massive funding shortage. To date, it has received just 14% of the $385 million it needs until the end of the year. It warns aid agencies will not be able to provide the health care, clean water and sanitation, shelter, and other life-saving measures needed to help people survive the pandemic. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Face coverings will be compulsory in the locked-down Australian city of Melbourne beginning Wednesday as the COVID-19 crisis intensifies. Residents can only leave their homes for work, study, exercise, and other essential business. Phil Mercer has more.
The face covering order is the first of its kind in Australia, which has recorded more than 500 new cases of COVID-19 in the past 24 hours. It's the single biggest daily increase since the pandemic began. Most have been detected in the southeastern state of Victoria. Outbreaks have been reported at more than 40 nursing homes, and several prisons have been put into lockdown. Bandanas, scarves, and handkerchiefs are all acceptable, as the people of Melbourne are ordered to cover their faces outdoors. Residents are being given official advice on how to make their own masks from clothes and shopping bags. Associate Professor Philip Russo is from Monash University.
It's not an exact science because we're still learning about this every day. We know that it's transmitted through close contact, so physical distancing is our first action in our prevention. And when physical distancing can't be maintained, then that's when masks can come into consideration.
As the crisis continues, travel between Victoria State and other parts of Australia is being heavily restricted and more stringent border controls put in place. About 2,400 new COVID-19 cases have been reported in the past week across Australia. It is a significant number. Since the pandemic began, almost 12,500 infections have been diagnosed. The spike in cases is undermining Australia's previous successes in tackling the virus. This week, a judicial inquiry began into how infected travellers returning to Australia from overseas could have spread the disease while in mandatory quarantine in Victoria. The hearing was told that many recent infections in the state could be linked to breaches in hotel security. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Taking a look from a global perspective, Reuters' Gloria So.
The number of documented coronavirus infections worldwide has now passed 15 million, and with nearly 4 million cases and counting, and over 1,000 deaths in a single day, the U.S. remains at the top of the list. Reuters has been keeping tallies of the running estimates from world governments. California crossed 400,000 cases on Tuesday, meaning if California were a country, it would have the fifth highest number of cases in the world. Other states are also seeing record surges in cases and deaths, including Florida, which has reported over 10,000 new cases almost every day for a week. Elsewhere, the Reuters tally shows the disease is accelerating the fastest in the Americas, which account for more than half the world's infections and half its deaths. With over 2 million cases, Brazil has the second highest number of virus infections in the world. While President Jair Bolsonaro has tested positive for the virus himself, he has continued playing down the scale of the outbreak. India, Russia, and South Africa round out the rest of the top five countries with the highest number of infections. And even in parts of the world where the virus was thought to have subsided, it has returned with a vengeance. In Europe, once the epicenter of the pandemic, everyone is watching Spain's new outbreaks. The city of Barcelona is still limiting the number of people allowed on its beaches, fighting off locals and tourism that surged when restrictions were first lifted.
Gloria So reports for Reuters News. The Associated Press reports the first possible U.S. vaccine is set to begin final stage testing next week in a study of 30,000 people to see if it is safe and effective. Meanwhile, the United Nations International Children's Fund said on Tuesday, the closing of educational facilities due to the coronavirus pandemic has resulted in at least 40 million preschool students worldwide missing out on learning and development. VOA has expanded pandemic coverage on our website. Still to come.
The misuse of these forces is very troubling because the president seems to be using them as if they are a personal guard, a kind of Praetorian guard to protect the president, and not for the purposes for which Congress is funded.
This is VOA News.
AP Showbiz Minute. Amber Heard dismissed accusations Tuesday that she fabricated allegations of domestic violence against ex-husband Johnny Depp and told a British court that the first time she struck him after years of abuse was to defend her sister from being thrown down the stairs. Taking to the witness box for a second day during Depp's libel case against a British tabloid at the High Court in London, the actress faced a barrage of questions over alleged incidents that are central to The Sun's labelling of Depp in an article as a wife-beater. The 45th Toronto International Film Festival will be a much-diminished event this year due to the coronavirus pandemic, but it has an opening night film, Spike Lee's filmed version of David Byrne's Broadway theatrical concert American Utopia. The film will premiere on September 10th in Toronto. The Duchess of Cambridge has released two new photos of Prince George to mark his seventh birthday on Wednesday. The young royal is third in line to the British throne after his grandfather Charles and father William. This is Lizzie Knight with AP Showbiz Minute.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. U.S. police fired tear gas on Tuesday as crowds gathered in the northwestern city of Portland, Oregon, to protest against police brutality and racial injustice. Video posted online showed tear gas canisters being fired to disperse protesters who were knocking down sections of a steel fence put up around a federal courthouse building, which has been the center of protests since the May 25 killing of George Floyd by Minneapolis police. The clampdown on demonstrations in the liberal city has drawn widespread criticism and legal challenges as videos surfaced of officers without clear identification badges using force and unmarked vehicles to arrest protesters without explanation. Acting Homeland Security Secretary Chad Wolf defended the federal crackdown.
These police officers are not stormtroopers. They are not the Gestapo, as some have described them. That description is offensive, it's hyperbolic, and it's dishonest. And every law enforcement officer and every reasonable American knows this. While I look forward to the day that our officers are redeployed back to their regular day-to-day mission, we will not shrink from our duty because of this violence. I've heard the mayor of Portland recently state that the federal government is to blame for this violence. Rational people know that is not true. We will not retreat. We will not continue, or we will continue to take the appropriate action to protect our facilities and our law enforcement officers. What I can tell you is the department will continue to do our authorized mission in any city across the country.
Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden accused the Trump administration of egregious tactics in Portland, saying the response by federal agents was stoking divisions in the country. That comes as President Trump contemplates sending additional federal officers to other U.S. cities. International Edition's Lori London asked University of California Hastings constitutional law professor Joel Paul about the administration's actions.
The president is using forces that have been specifically funded by Congress for purposes for which they were not intended. So the president is using the Border Patrol to patrol the streets of Portland, Oregon. That's not why Congress is funding the Border Patrol. The Border Patrol is there to prevent illegal trafficking and illegal immigration. Similarly, the president apparently is using the Coast Guard. The Coast Guard, the argument is that they can use the Coast Guard within 100 miles of the coast, but clearly this is not a proper use of the Coast Guard. The misuse of these forces is very troubling because the president seems to be using them as if they are a personal guard, a kind of praetorian guard to protect the president, and not for the purposes for which Congress has funded them.
We've heard reports, or we've seen some of these forces hitting protesters with batons, lots of tear gas. It certainly seems like it's escalating, but one of the big concerns that we're hearing about is these officers, they're not identified, pulling people into unmarked vehicles as if they're, you know, taking them into custody, but not identifying themselves or saying what crime they've committed or where they're taking them. That's really, really not something we see in the United States.
This is very troubling because it violates specific constitutional protections afforded to the accused. You can't just simply grab someone on the street and throw them into an unmarked vehicle. You've got to give them their Miranda rights. You have to tell them why they're being arrested. You have to identify yourself. And the failure to do those three things constitutes a clear constitutional violation.
I guess that would explain why the state of Oregon, the American Civil Liberties Union, and others have filed suit against these forces even being deployed to Oregon.
Yes, so the state of Oregon also undoubtedly feels that the federal government here is stepping in and performing what is essentially a state function, that is to provide police protection in the streets of Oregon. And in doing so, the federal government is also stepping on the 10th Amendment rights of the state. The state is a sovereign, and the federal government cannot simply assume state functions.
The president now also threatening that he will send these forces to other cities. We are hearing where he may already be in the process of doing that. This is raising a lot of alarm bells in this country. This is something we have never seen. And it's worrisome when you see the videos of these massive forces with these protesters.
This is a very worrisome moment in the country for the president to be using forces this way. I think that there's reason to hope that lower courts will agree that you cannot use forces for this purpose and you can't intrude on people's rights. I'm also confident that in the final analysis, that the president will not be able to use the United States military because the United States military is expressly forbidden from engaging in law enforcement functions domestically. So it is a worrisome sign, and much will ultimately depend on Congress and on the next election.
Joel Paul is a constitutional law professor at UC Hastings in California, and he was speaking to International Edition's Lori London. China says the U.S. has ordered it to close its consulate in Houston, Texas, in what an official called an outrageous and unjustified move that will sabotage China-U.S. relations. AP correspondent Charles De Ledesma has more.
A foreign ministry spokesman has condemned the move, which comes as tensions rise between the world's two largest economies. At a daily news conference, he warned of firm countermeasures if the U.S. does not reverse its decision. Meanwhile, media reports in Houston say authorities had responded to reports of a fire at the consulate, with the Houston Chronicle reporting witnesses saying people had been burning paper in what appeared to be trash cans. I'm Charles De Ledesma.
The State Department said the People's Republic of China has engaged for years in massive illegal spying and influence operations throughout the United States against U.S. government officials and American citizens. Speaking in Denmark, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo elaborated.
We are setting out clear expectations for how the Chinese Communist Party is going to behave. And when they don't, we're going to take actions that protect the American people, protect our security, our national security, and also protect our economy and jobs. That's the actions that you're seeing taken by President Trump. We'll continue to engage in those.
Several media reports indicate China may consider closing the U.S. consulate in Wuhan. The State Department withdrew its staff and their families from Wuhan earlier this year amid the coronavirus outbreak. Taiwan's foreign minister says China is sending military planes near the island with increasing frequency in what appears to be a stepping up of its threat to use force to bring it under Beijing's control. Taiwan's foreign minister, Joseph Wu, says such flights are happening more often than reported in the media and are virtually a daily occurrence. He says the flights, along with Chinese military exercises simulating an attack on Taiwan, are causing major concern for the government in Taipei. China claims the self-ruling island democracy as its own territory and has long threatened to attack with its increasingly powerful military. You've been listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day. You can do so by pointing your web browser on your phone, your tablet, or any other computer to voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Be well, be safe, and good night.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Only over the past decade has Beijing asserted a kind of ownership of most of the South China Sea, based on vague historical claims and a map depicting nine dashes covering most of the sea. Included within that area are numerous uninhabited islands, shoals, and submerged features, many of which are surrounded by rich fishing waters. The area may also be sitting on rich mineral deposits, including an estimated $2.5 trillion in recoverable oil and natural gas assets. Since 2013, Beijing has stepped up its attempts to assert control over most of the South China Sea through an extensive campaign of destructive land reclamation and construction of military facilities of disputed features as a way of asserting claims to maritime areas that lack a foundation in international law. China also conducts a campaign of saber-rattling and bullying targeted at other claimant states. In July 2016, an arbitral tribunal constituted under Annex 7 of the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea ruled that there was no legal basis for China to claim historic rights within the nine-dash line, and that People's Republic of China could not assert maritime claims beyond those specifically provided for in the convention. Nonetheless, the PRC persists in pressing its unlawful maritime claims. On July 13, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said in a written statement that the U.S. position on China's maritime claims in the South China Sea is aligned with key aspects of the tribunal's decision. Beijing's claims to offshore resources across most of the South China Sea are completely unlawful, as is its campaign of bullying to control them. This means that the United States does not recognize Beijing's maritime claims to waters within the 370-kilometer exclusive economic zone of another country beyond a lawful territorial sea generated from islands it claims in the Spratlys, nor do we recognize its claims to underwater features like James Shoal or low-tide elevations like Mischief Reef and Second Thomas Shoal, which under international law may not be claimed by any state and are incapable of generating maritime zones of their own. The world will not allow Beijing to treat the South China Sea as its maritime empire, said Secretary of State Pompeo in the statement. America stands with our Southeast Asian allies and partners in protecting their sovereign rights to offshore resources, consistent with their rights and obligations under international law. We stand with the international community in defense of freedom of the seas and respect for sovereignty and reject any push to impose might makes right in the South China Sea or the wider region.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.